But do you think that doctors risk losing their license if they deviate too much from the standard of care? And I know that's a threat out there. I know it's a threat.
I think so. They say that they're afraid. This is something that it's a bugaboo of mine, actually, Bev. They say that they're afraid of malpractice and, yeah. The being sued. I don't think that's true.
I think it is
they're afraid of their fellow doctors.
The good life is one inspired by love and guided by knowledge. You'll find both love and knowledge here on The Misdiagnosed Life. Here is your host, Beverly Butler.
Julia Shopik is the best-selling author of the book Honest Medicine, Effective, Time-Tested, Inexpensive Treatments for Life-Threatening Diseases. And she's here today to talk about her book and how she helped her husband extend his life by at least 12 years after he had been diagnosed with brain cancer. Well, Julia, welcome to the show. What prompted you and what did you learn during your husband's illness that got you thinking about and prompted you to actually write a book, Honest Medicine?
Well, good question, Beverly. Thank you. I'm glad to be here, by the way. When my husband was diagnosed at the age of 40 with a cancerous brain tumor, one would have thought, given my background, I was the daughter of a doctor who did not like the medical establishment. And he told me, never, never, never just do exactly what doctors tell you. You would have thought that I would have gone into research gear right away, but I didn't. He was diagnosed with a cancerous brain tumor the size of an orange, and he was only 40 years old. It was 1990, and both of us just froze. We absolutely froze, and we did exactly what the doctor said. Of course, he did need the surgery, and he did chemo and he did radiation, and he was then starting to get all the side effects of the radiation, especially. He got a radiation-caused stroke. He got what's called hydrocephalus, water on the brain. And I just was frozen. We just kept, anyway, long story short, at the three-year mark, he was only supposed to live maximum 3 years, according to the diagnosis, an astrocytoma 3 brain tumor. But at around the three-year mark, I noticed he's still surviving, but he's not doing well.
Now, did he have 3 years of chemotherapy and radiation?
No.
Okay.
He had, good question. He had those in the first year. Very good question, Beverly, because what happened was that he started to get every side effect. And these side effects, I guess I should use the word complications, because they made him need more surgeries. For instance, when he started getting what I called hydrocephalus, water on the brain, that's not so simple. What that caused is that he had to have a surgery to put in a shunt. A tube, exactly. And then that malfunctioned and on and on. So for the first 3 years, we were literally involved in keeping him alive from the complications, from the side effects.
Yeah.
And in that time also, he had a stroke. This is a 41-year-old man having a stroke from the effects of the radiation. It's called a radiation-caused stroke. It has a name.
You say a lot of people don't know that. What are some of the other things that radiation can cause?
Oh, Lord. Oh, are you ready for this? Radiation can cause, and this is the dirty little secret of radiation therapy. It can cause non-healing of the skin.
Mm-hmm.
And picture it on the head. This is just very, very serious because you don't have extra skin there, And when it doesn't heal because of the radiation, it just keeps opening up and opening up. This is the kind of thing, and I almost was blocking till you asked, what did you do the first 3 years? That's what we were doing the first 3 years. We were just attending to the side effects and the complications. Radiation, I call it the gift, as I said, that keeps on giving. That's really a term from blood donor recruitment. The blood donations is a gift that keeps on giving, but I call that. And I actually wrote an article that was published in the National Brain Tumor Foundation as their cover story, by the way, about non-healing skin and what we found 10 years later when his skin really didn't heal. In the first 3 years, we did finally get it to heal, But then he had a recurrence of the tumor 10 years later, and the skin just wouldn't heal. So that may be the most serious side effect. I don't want to use the word side effect. That sounds too benign. Mm-hmm. But complication from radiation.
Yeah. And skin is such a protective barrier that when it's problems with that, that can be serious, especially on your head, like you said. You know, you don't have much skin there.
You know, that's just what I say. I say, you know what? If I had cancer, you know, in my stomach or something, and they did a surgery, I'll just be very honest. I have a lot of extra skin there. So if it didn't heal...
Most of us do.
If it didn't heal, they could cut a little piece and it would finally heal, you know? Not so with the skin on the head. Not so. Yeah. You know, even if, you know, they use the term fathead, you know, you don't have fat on the skin and the head, you know? So what happened... I'm sorry, go on.
This water on the brain, you know, hydrocephalus. Anyway, was it caused? You know, you said it was caused by the radiation. Was it caused by the radiation or something to do with the tumor?
You know what? Maybe I'm blaming, you know, as a non-scientist, but I believe they said it was caused by the radiation. I could be wrong. Mm-hmm. But in any case, all of the treatments are just so hard on the body. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I, after the 3-year mark, I was like, you know what? The man is surviving. He was only, as I said, by that time, you know, 43. I said, he's still surviving and he's the love of my life. Maybe I better start researching.
Now, how long did they give him to live?
They gave him a maximum of 3 years. If you look up astrocytoma 3, that's grade 3. The glioblastoma, which is what John McCain has, is grade 4. Of the same kind of tumor, but this was a grade 3. So glioblastomas, you know, you have a 14.6-month survival, but with astrocytoma 3, you can have a up to 3-year survival. Mm-hmm. And some people make it a lot longer, but I decided I better start researching.
Yeah.
I
wanted to add, what were his symptoms that actually sent him to the doctor to begin with? I'm just curious as to that.
September 15th, he had, and this was 1990, September 15th, he had a grand mal seizure that, I mean, it was terrifying. I was in my office, you know, I work out of my home doing public relations, and I was in my office, and all of a sudden I heard a bam. And that was, you know, it turned out I ran into the living room where my husband had been reading. And I saw him on the floor just having a grand mal seizure, which means he was just foaming at the mouth. He was rigid. He was shaking. And the bam was him falling and the light falling. You know, he just kicked the light. And that was very, you know, that was a sign that something was wrong. So we went to the emergency room and they admitted him. And they first thought it was a stroke, and then they found out it was a brain tumor. Mm. So that's what did it. And it's brain tumors are very, they're terrible.
Yeah, you know, they say that the evidence is showing. Of course, back in 1990, we didn't have cell phones like we do today. But they say that cell phones, you know, evidence is coming pretty strongly that cell phones are causing a certain number of the brain tumors and all. This probably wasn't the case with your husband's, as it was
absolutely
so long ago?
Absolutely not. However, you might want to look up a woman named Devra, D-E-V-R-A, Davis, because she's a scientist, and that is her contention, and she's done a lot of work in that area. No, my husband, if anything caused it, and I believe there was something that caused it, the poor man grew up in Flint, Michigan. That's Automobile City, you know, with the fumes of the automobile, but he had a double whammy on him. His parents were beauticians, and their beauty shop was on the first floor of where he lived. So he grew up on the second floor with a beauty shop right below him, and in those years there were fumes like you wouldn't believe. So he had double, triple fumes, and that's what I think caused it. You know, you can't prove it, but...
There's quite a few beauticians that they get pretty sick sometimes because of all the chemicals they're around. Which just makes sense. You
know. Yeah, it does. So that's what I think caused it. And, you know, he was just such a fighter. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, the first thing I found after that 3-year mark was a nutritionist, and she was fantastic. Her name was Jean Wallace, and her company, I guess you'd call it her practice, is Nutritional Solutions. And what they did, what she did for him, and she and her colleagues, they first of all got him off sugar. And, you know, cancer cells love sugar.
Oh, yeah, sugar feeds cancer. Yeah.
Exactly. They got him off sugar, and then what they did was they followed the studies, even the European studies, that show which nutritional supplements will kill a tumor, which ones will make it so that inflammation will be kept at a minimum. You know, the supplements that she recommended were tailor-made for his condition. I mean, she wasn't a doctor, but she had blood tests done, you mm-hmm. know, through his doctor.
That's really smart to do that, because there's so many supplements out here, and I hate to say it, but most of the supplements are junk. They're not high quality. They're very low quality, and, you know, you can actually be, you know, putting toxins in your body by taking some of these supplements. So you have to be very, very careful as to the supplements you take.
Exactly, and you know what? She recommended, her group recommends supplements that are of the highest quality. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you have to get them through them because unless you're a practitioner, you can't really get these brands, you know.
Yeah, sometimes that is the case.
So, but he was on the very best supplements. And this is what, Beverly, this is where I started getting my aha moments, you know, where I said I have to do something. Mm-hmm. He started to feel great. This is a guy who was not feeling great in those first, be able to take walks, you know, be able to read, well, he always read, but to read nonstop, and he would go to the doctor, and by the way, Beverly, they called him their miracle patient.
Oh,
you know,
wow.
They were just so proud of him.
So now, up until this time when he started feeling so much better, he had just basically changed his diet and started taking some very high-quality, targeted nutritional supplements.
Exactly.
Okay.
And, you know, today, if he'd been diagnosed, I would have known of other things to do as well. But this was really enough to cause the miracle. And as I said, the doctors were calling him their miracle patient, but they weren't at all interested in what caused that miracle.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted to tell them. At one point, the doctor said, let's talk about the drugs you're on, you know, anti-seizure medications and all of that. And my husband said, okay, it's, you know, I'm on this, this, and this. But he says, I'm on a lot of supplements, too. And you know what the doctor said?
Hmm.
He goes, next
question. I can imagine.
Yeah,
because this was, what, 93 probably, somewhere around there?
Oh, yeah, you know, I mean, it's all blurring, but yes, about 93.
Yeah, and back then, I mean, today you still have a lot of doctors that are just not open to it, but we're getting more and more doctors, especially the younger ones, that are open to it, and some of them are actually going into, you know, functional medicine and that type of thing. But back then, in the 90s?
No.
Oh, goodness. No. I mean, you were really looked upon as one of those quack people, you know, if you did that.
I was. As a matter of fact, when he was in the hospital at one point, I was told, are you ready for this? To stop bringing the organic food in. Yes. They said hospital food is better for him. I'm like, oh my God.
Better than organic. Yeah, I believe it.
Yeah.
I believe it. You know?
Yep, they did.
I mean, and this is, I mean, you know, well, we need them, but, you know, it reminds me of the story of, you know, back in, I believe it was the 1700s when Dr. Semmelweis, he made the discovery that it'd be a good idea for doctors to wash their hands.
Right.
You know, between, you know, autopsying dead people and going and delivering babies, you know, because they were having a lot of women die. And he said, you know, it might be something that he's taking from one to the other. And, you know, they put him, I mean, and this is, but what I'm getting at, is this is that mindset, you know, the authority figures and, you know, they think they know it all, you know, and they're worshipped as God, you know, a lot of times and that kind of a thing. But really they don't, you know, because back then, even Dr. Sibyl was, they thought he was a quack because he thought, but see, that was before the germ theory was discovered. But see, they thought he was a quack. So they put him in a mental institution. They thought he was, even though he tested his theory and it was correct, the death rate started going down. More women started living, but no, that wasn't good enough, you know. I mean, it was just too simple, I reckon. But anyway, they put him in a mental institution, and the last 2 years of his life, he spent in a mental institution and died there. All because he said doctors needed to wash their hands between patients. Now, you know, it's ridiculous.
It's an amazing story. I've definitely heard that. Now I believe there are statues of him, throughout where they vilified him. But they definitely vilified him.
Yeah, but, you know, I just have a saying that whether something is crazy or not, oftentimes just simply depends on how much you know.
That's right. That's right. And you know what? At first, I mean, I know that they didn't believe, you know, that what we were doing, you know, it was like a disconnect. They knew that something was making him live longer and look better, you know.
Yeah.
But the disconnect came with they wanted to think it was just what they were doing, you know.
Right.
And I laugh, but isn't that a shame? Because they could help other patients, too.
I know. But it's too simple. I mean, it's something that's just too simple. And, you know, I get it, you know. I mean, they go all these years to school, they're smart, they know all these chemical names, all these medications and what this can do, what that can do. But still, you know, what are we, you know, what did you take an oath to do? I mean, you know, so.
First, do no harm.
And if something's simple, I mean, you know, and we've got a lot of good doctors. And again, I don't mean to bash doctors on this show, but we have a lot of good doctors. But I'm telling you, folks, we have to take our health into our own hands and do our own research. And I'm not saying that at all. But you can find doctors that will work with you, especially nowadays. Now, back in the 90s, that was much harder. But now there's so many doctors out there that will work with you on things.
May I say something that may sound negative, but I just want your audience to know, to know that with specialists, it's harder. Since John McCain's diagnosis with a glioblastoma, I've been going on the Facebook glioblastoma and brain tumor page about treatments that they might consider in addition to the standard of care. And it's coming out over and over that the neuropsychologists are telling them, don't take supplements, don't do this, you know, and just do the standard of care, which will only give them a median survival of 14.6 months. Mm-hmm. So I do find that discouraging. The encouraging news is exactly what you said, that some general doctors are much more open. So that's the good news and the bad news.
Yeah, and some of these doctors, especially the young ones, are actually going into different alternative medicine fields. You've got homeopaths and naturopaths, and you've got functional medical doctors and, you know, various things, but it's basically, you know, it's the same general principle. They're just going, looking at more natural means and looking at the body. It's always best to look at the body as a whole and treat the whole body, not just a piece or a part of it.
Yes. But I do want people to know that when their neurosurgeon or when their oncologist, you know, poo-poos what they're coming, it does not necessarily mean that what they've proposed is a bad idea. It could just mean that the neuro-oncologist, the oncologist, has not heard of it or has been trained not to be open.
Right, right. And oftentimes that, you know, that very well could be what it means.
Yeah.
Well, we are coming up on a break right now. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back. I'm talking to Julia Shopik and we're talking about her experience that she had with her husband that was lived quite a few years longer than the doctor said he would. He died of a brain tumor. And we will be right back.
The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. It's AmericaOutloud.com, where the conversation never ends. With 24/7 streaming on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Okay, we're back. You're listening to the Misdiagnosed Live podcast and talk radio on the America Out Loud Network, and I'm Beverly Butler, your host, and I'm here talking with Julia Shopik, and we're talking about her experience that she's had in the past with her husband that, lived several years longer than the doctor said he would, simply because she was doing a lot of extra research and trying some things outside of conventional medicine to extend its life. And we're talking about that story. She also wrote a book on this. Julia, I really admire you and your tenaciousness and the what you did and all the research that you did. And a lot of times, and I've been in the same similar situation, many people know my daughter was sick for several years. She's you know, practically well now. But when you get desperate, you really get to doing a lot of research. And what made you start looking in other places for treatment instead of traditional care? Now, you did traditional care for a year or so, is my understanding, and then he had all
years,
a few years. He had a lot of side effects. Skin not healing was one of them. But what really made you look toward other answers?
Well, the big aha moment came 10 years later when he had a. By the way, I was looking all the time for things, you know, to heal the skin, to do, you know, I was researching all the time. I shouldn't downplay that after that 3-year mark. But in 2010, he had a, 2000, forgive me, he had a recurrence of the tumor. 2001, he had a recurrence of the tumor, and I knew that he should not have surgery. Tumor, I should say that. We had been, you know, you went after you've had a brain tumor, you have MRIs very frequently, you know. Mm-hmm. So I knew it was slow growing. And but you know, his skin had not healed before. So as I, you know, so I was like, this is going to be a disaster, you know. Mm-hmm. I even went and had a private meeting with his neurosurgeon, and I said, I don't think we should do, oh no, it's going to be anyway. It was not a piece of cake. Mm-hmm. And indeed I had been right, and I did not want to be right. His skin would not heal.
And this was after more radiation treatment.
This was 10 years after radiation. Mm. And as I said, radiation is the gift that keeps on giving, right?
Yeah.
And
so what was making his skin, so he wasn't getting radiation again?
No. It was just that the radiation kept making the skin was more fragile than it had been years ago. Mm-hmm. And, you know, years earlier, they had gone into that same suture line several times, you know, because it hadn't healed the first time, and then he had the hydrocephalus, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And this time, in 2001, the skin really wouldn't heal.
Now, did he have surgery again?
Oh, yes.
Okay, that's where he had surgery again, and then it would not heal after that.
It would not heal. Excuse me. I guess that hadn't been to talk with the doctor. The doctor said it's going to be fine, so I did let him have the surgery. And I say let him because he was happy. My husband was happy for me to make all the decisions, you know. So he was like, oh, she's a doctor's daughter. She really knows what she's doing. I'm like, you know. But in any case, his skin really didn't heal this time after this surgery. He had 8 additional surgeries. I want to say that slowly. 8 additional surgeries.
Oh, my.
To try to get the skin on his head, to try to get it to hold together. And all this time, I was researching my heart out. I was researching this time for ways to heal the skin. You know, mm-hmm. I knew that what they were doing. What was it? Einstein who said the sign of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result.
That's right. Yeah, I believe so.
You know. Well, they kept operating to try to, you know, open it up and then close it up again.
But that's all they knew to do.
That's all they knew. Exactly, Bev. And I was frantic, and I put together a big report for them. They didn't read it, of course, and they promised to. But in any case, luckily, I say luckily because I was actually doing something on behalf of one of my clients, my public relations clients, and I was talking with a doctor named Dr. Carlos Reynes, and I told him about, you know, we were colleagues too, you know, and I told him about what was happening with my husband. He said, have you ever heard of Silver Lawn? And I said, silver what? S-I-L-V-E-R, L as in Larry, O-N as in Nancy.
Okay.
Silver Lawn.
Okay, go ahead.
And it's a magnificent, marvelous treatment. So there I got my PR skills going, and I talked with the head of the company Argentum named Bart Flick, Dr. Bart Flick, who invented Silver Lawn. Before you knew it, I had pieces of Silver Lawn that were donated. Dr. Flick, you know, donated them. And it's a very dramatic story. I tell it in my book, In Honest Medicine, but I can't tell you all the things. But I got the doctor, the neurosurgeon, to agree to let us put the silver line on Tim's head because, of course, he was still in the hospital, you know. Uh-huh. And I don't know if you know, I'm sure you do, Bev, but I don't know about if your listeners know how hard it is to get doctors to approve something to be used that is outside the...
Yeah, you could probably get a law passed in Congress quicker.
Yes, exactly. But the doctor was out of tricks, you know, 8 surgeries, and he was like, he was done. You know, he was scared.
He was getting desperate, too.
He was. And he was a nice man, you know. And we put the silver line on, he had me put the silver line on Tim's head because I got the exact directions on how to do it because it's not just simple. You don't just put it on the head. It has to be moistened and et cetera. Anyway, long story short, his skin began to heal overnight for the first time. In 8 months.
That's impressive.
And it was so impressive. Bev, I was so excited, and the doctors started to not look happy with me. So I was like, why aren't they liking me? They used to love me.
Yeah.
When I was the crying almost widow, you know, mm-hmm. they were very comforting.
Mm-hmm. You know?
But now they were like avoiding me. So one doctor who did like me came up to me and he goes, we don't think it was what you found. He had the accent on you that healed your husband's skin. And I was like, you know, I said, excuse me? You know, yeah. We put it on yesterday. I said, well, what do you think it was? He said, we think it was the vancomycin. That's the IV antibiotic that he had been on for 6 weeks.
Yeah. Well, what did you say? Yeah, sure, go ahead. That's fine. Yeah, that helped.
But no,
let me keep putting the silver line on it.
No, it gets better. I said, Bev, I said, but he's been on vancomycin for 6 weeks. You know what the doctor said? Vanco is, they have little, little pet names. Mm-hmm. Vanco is like that. It kicks in.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. That's convenient. That's real convenient. Yeah.
I didn't know what to say. But what I did think was, I didn't say it, I got to do something about this, you know.
Yeah.
We got to get the heck out of here. And you know what? By then, I didn't say this, but 8 surgeries later, my husband was really brain injured, bedbound, incontinent. I mean, the 8 extra surgeries really almost did him in.
Oh, yeah. That's so hard on the body.
But yes, and the spirit. And by then, he was severely bra- But I took him home, and he lived for another 3.5 years. But during that time, I was percolating the idea, what can I do to warn people, to help people, maybe more than warn them, to help them to know that that there are treatments out there that your doctor may not know about, probably doesn't know about, that really are science-based and really have, you know, they make sense. And you have to look outside the box because your doctor won't do it for you.
Yeah.
And that's what my book, Honest Medicine, is about. Because what I did was I said, you know, oh, this is funny, Bev. My mother, who was my biggest fan with all of this, said to me, you know, the book should be, I said, I have to write a book. So first I started a blog, honestmedicine.com, and then I said, I got to write a book. And she said, you know what, your story will be enough for a book. I said, I don't think so. I said, I don't think people would believe it. You know, that we found silver lawn, it worked, and that the doctor said, I said, I don't think they'll believe it. So she ran it by a few of her friends, and she says, you're right, they didn't believe it. You
know? Right, yeah.
But so I said, okay, there are treatments out there, I know there are, that doctors don't know about, but that have been around. I set the bar so high, Bev, that nobody could deny that these treatments are the real deal, you know?
Yeah, and that's a lot of what you talk about in your book is your story, but you talk about some of the treatments that you've found. And we want to touch on that here, toward the end of the show. And we're probably, for the listeners, we're probably going to make 2 shows out of this because she's got a lot of really good information. And we're going to talk about, probably on the next show, we're going to talk about the treatments, the different treatments you found, because that's worthy of a whole show within itself.
Oh, that, you know what? Let me just say, though, that the bar was set so high, They had to. Are you ready for this? I mean, I have to laugh because, you know, you don't have to set the bar this high to get good treatments, you know. But they had to have been around, I said, for at least 20, 25 years, you know.
Yeah.
And they had to have doctors who were championing them, that they are spending their lives spreading the word with not getting any money for doing it. And these treatments have to be very, very inexpensive. They could save health care, actually.
Right.
Because, you know that a lot of treatments that are out there, especially for things like autoimmune diseases, oh, my God, they're like $60,000 a year.
Oh, yeah.
And they have side effects that are horrible.
Yeah, some of these treatments are. And that's one of the bad things about natural medicine is it can get very, very expensive sometimes,
yes,
just depending on. I know, you know, Lyme disease care, we've had some experience with that. That's very expensive. And so that's a big, big plus if you've, you know, found treatments that work and that are inexpensive.
I did.
Yeah.
And I have to tell you, the treatments that I found, you know, and we can kind of give a little bit about them now,
sure,
and then talk more about them next time. But the treatments that I found were really, you know, it's like they really, really, really are effective and time-tested and inexpensive, and they work. I mean, for instance, one of them, intravenous alpha, well, the first one, of course, is Silverlon. I want people to know who have non-healing wounds. I've helped more people. One of the ways I helped more people was after the doctor said it was vancomycin kicking in.
Mm-hmm.
This was when Tim was still sick. You know, I called the National Brain Tumor Foundation. I said, I got a story, you know, and they know, the people who run the brain tumor foundations, they know about non-healing skin. So when I told them our story, they said, please write it up. And it became the cover story. And I can send a link to any of your listeners. Just write to me at julie@honestmedicine.com.
If you want to, Julia, you can just send me the link and we'll put it in the show notes below the show.
Oh, I'd love
show.
It. I will
yeah.
send that to you.
I will do that.
That would be terrific. And it was Silverlon and Surgery, Our Story of Healing, I believe was the title. And, you know, so the Silverlon's number one, okay? And that's the one I'm just a fan of Silverlon forever because it saved my husband. If we had found it earlier, Bev, I think he would have been alive, you know, much, much longer because
yeah.
I think the stress on his body just killed him.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Now, this would be you said all of these are safe, so there's no
yes.
real side effects.
No.
Usually,
no.
any silver products are pretty safe. How do you get that, or do you have it in your article? I mean, is
well,
it easy to
I can,
get
I,
pretty well?
I absolutely. Well, there's the yes and the no. Let me tell you. The yes is that they have a website, silverlon.com, SILVERLON.com. And that is, you know, it's there. You can buy it. But I always, for people that I know, they were so grateful for the article I wrote that if people are my people, you know, they'll actually help them. You know, sometimes they need a bigger piece than is sold on the, you know, you need a very big piece of it sometimes if you have a big wound.
Right.
And so, you know, so I can help people to get it. I guess that's going into detail. But it is a wonderful treatment. Very, so much less expensive than doing 8 additional surgeries, let me tell you.
Oh, goodness, yeah.
But it's not as lucrative, you know, for the hospital. I shouldn't say that. But anyway.
No, the truth's the truth.
The other treatments are intravenous alpha-lipoic acid, and that is an intravenous use of a natural substance, alpha-lipoic acid. You know, you can get alpha-lipoic acid as pills,
mm-hmm.
you know.
But, ALA for short, yeah.
ALA, exactly. But this is intravenous, and the man next time when we talk, I can tell the whole story about it. But the man who is the pioneer, Dr. Bert Berkson, who acts chapter 2 to my book, To Honest Medicine, he has helped so many people with end-stage liver disease. In other words, he's kept people from getting transplants.
Wow.
He's also had very good results in pancreatic, which is, as you know, a killer.
Oh, yeah.
And the other treatments
so
are...
So he's had good results. He's had good results with pancreatic cancer. Okay.
Go on.
Yeah, that's a big one. That's
yes.
a big
Not
one.
Not with everybody.
There.
Not with everybody,
yeah.
you know, but with some. And
I think it's important. Yeah, I think it's important to say that these, just because they work for some people, don't mean they're going to work for everybody. And and of course, we're not, you know, we're not giving medical advice or anything, but you need to, if you can find a doctor that can work with you on this, that's the ideal situation. But these are some things that you need to know about so that you can check it out and then make your own decision, you know, whether you want to try it or not. But it always keep in mind with not just natural substances, but with medications also, with anything, what works for one might not work for somebody else because we're all so different and we have different, so many different things going on in our bodies that sometimes we might respond to one thing, we won't respond to something else. So that's something important that people need to keep in mind also.
You know, when you remember when I said, you know, you have to do your own research. Unfortunately, if you're not a good researcher, if you don't know what you're doing online, is lots of things where they say cures all diabetes, cures
right.
all. Would they use the word cures?
Right. Or you better
they use
run.
The word saying it.
Yeah.
Run like hell.
Run.
Excuse that. That's my father's.
Yeah,
phrase.
You have
run
to
like
be
hell.
Very careful what you search, especially online. Yeah, that's very good advice there. We're going to take a quick break. I'm really enjoying this. We're going to come back and we're going to talk about the cancer industry and why they're still so behind on their treatments. They've been doing the same thing for 30 years. And I'm Beverly Butler with the Misdiagnosed Life podcast and talk radio, and we will be right back.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
Let the silent voices be heard. It's the rallying call that started it all. AmericaOutLoud.com. For a wide spectrum of programming from world and political news, societal and cultural stories, law enforcement, our military heroes, and much more. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Okay, I'm back. I'm Beverly Butler, and you're listening to the Misdiagnosed Life podcast and talk radio. And I'm here with Julia Shopik, and she's the author of Honest Medicine. And she dealt several years with her husband, who was sick with a brain tumor, brain cancer. And she started thinking outside the box. There were some problems with some, you know, side effects, if you want to call it that, of some of the traditional care that he was getting. And she started thinking outside the box and doing some other things. And we're going to talk more about this next week. But she touched on some things that she did to help her husband. And it started helping him, it helped him a great deal. And actually, it helped, you know, she believed it helped extend his life. He ended up living over 12 years and I think was given maybe 3 years at the most to live, two or three. But Julia, what is, you know, it seems like standard medicine, they're just inside that box. They do a lot of times for so many of them, they just do not want to get outside that box. Now, what is it? I mean, the standard treatment in the standard care in treating cancer has been essentially the same for over 30 years. And it doesn't have too good of a success rate. Now, I'm not sure what the success rate of radiation therapy is. I've tried finding that. I haven't been, maybe you can tell me, but the success rate of the 5-year survival rate of chemotherapy patients is just like 2% in America. Now, that's pretty low. And they've been doing the same things over and over and over again, and they just don't have too good of success rate with it. Why is this?
Well, it has to do with not what you said, not wanting to step, not being afraid maybe to step outside the box. And you know, there's an article that I often refer people to by a doctor named Kevin Fo, PHO, and it talks about the standard of care, and it talks about that people don't understand, nor do doctors, that the standard of care does not, you know how, doesn't that sound wonderful, standard of care, like it's the best care?
Absolutely.
And, you know, the standard of care is not necessarily the best care. What it means is, it's really, the definition is what your fellow doctors would do. So in other words, if you do the standard of care, even if it doesn't work, you will not get in trouble with your with the medical boards, with your fellow doctors. And this is very scary because people are, you know, at the behest of the standard of care. And this gets particularly dangerous. I mean, there actually are a few cancers, their testicular cancer, for instance, where the chemo does work. And there are a few others. If even if I, of course, I couldn't get testicular cancer, but if somebody I loved had it, I would say do the chemos. But with things like the glioblastoma or pancreatic cancer, you know, the really hard ones, the difficult ones, the standard of care has a lousy, lousy result. And this is where I am out there, you know, trying to get people, trying to educate people about the cancer industry. Yeah, sorry, and go on.
And the standard of care does work for some people, and I mean it's worked for several people, but the problem is, I mean, they have so many side effects, and I guess what I should have said is the thing with it is, I think one of the promising things with the standard of care is sometimes they're beginning to use more targeted treatments. Now, like you said, maybe about the testicular cancer, maybe one of them, but they're using targeted treatments and they're using it in combination with diet and supplementation and other things, you know, like the ketogenic diet. And I'm sure we'll get more into this next week on next week's show. But they're using, and I think that's good. And it's not that I'm totally against conventional medicine. I'm not, because sometimes you need medicines, you know, and sometimes you don't, but sometimes you do. And but I'm all about getting to the root cause of things and fixing that, and, you know, as best you can. And I think in most cases, if you keep digging and keep researching, you can. But of course, the outcome's different depending on what you have. But do you think that doctors risk losing their license if they deviate too much from the standard of care? And I know that's a threat out there. I know it's a threat.
I think so. You know, they say that they're afraid. This is something that, it's a bugaboo of mine, actually, Bev. They say that they're afraid of malpractice. And, you know, the being sued. I don't think that's true.
I would question it too.
What it is they're afraid of their fellow doctors.
Yeah.
And their fellow doctors will report them. They're cutting into, well, I shouldn't sound like a conspiracy theorist, and I hope I don't. But, you know, they will go after their fellow doctors who are doing something different. For instance, who are doing, well, Dr. Brzezinski in Texas has been brought before the medical board. I have to laugh time after time after time.
He's been relentlessly persecuted.
No, I'm laughing because he's
and he's helped
back.
So many people. He has helped so many people. I mean, if you put him up against standard medical care, and I mean, I don't know the stats. I don't want to say for sure on air here because, you know, I don't have the stats in front of me, but I know he has helped a lot of people. I mean, in some very dire situations to get well. And,
that's
you know,
right.
I think it's
that's
interesting
right.
that it's come out that about 33% of oncologists, when questioned if they got cancer, they would not use chemotherapy. So
it's true.
I think that's interesting. And another thing that it's also coming out more and more that chemotherapy actually causes inflammation, which can actually cause cancer. And I want to read something from a study. One of the studies said this was in an article on naturalnews.com, and it says that the chemical death of cancer cells creates inflammation, which feeds cancer growth. Yet another study links chemotherapy to the spread of cancer. Now, it also states in this article, it was in a study by Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center, radiation and chemotherapy treatments that kill tumor cells were found to cause cancerous tumors to grow bigger and more prolific. In fact, the dying cancer cells that chemotherapy set into into motion actually trigger the inflammation that causes tumors to grow more aggressively. So, and of course, you can go to naturalnews.com and read that article. But it was a very interesting article on how that chemotherapy is actually causing cancer in some cases. I don't know that you can say it in every case, but it has a tendency to cause, and in some cases, it causes cancer to grow. You know, and chemotherapy and radiation are so toxic. You know, that's just putting a heavier burden on the immune system.
Well, there's cancer is very, very smart. And once, you know, you can have chemotherapy working, you know, what did they say? Oh, you know, no sign of the cancer. Whoops, it came back. Well, it found another avenue, you know, to come back through.
Right.
And that's why, you know, when we talk next week about my reaction to John McCain's getting a glioblastoma diagnosis, that what we're looking at now is ways to attack the cancer. Yes, I will say that. To defeat the cancer and raise the immune system at the same time.
Right. And that's what some people are doing.
Different things.
Yeah.
That's what people are doing.
Yeah.
And even these treatments, you know, that they're coming up with, the problem is, Bev, that with this darned FDA approval system, you know, the phase 3 clinical trials, they're looking for a magic bullet.
Right. And there's not one.
There is not.
No.
And I think it's a system, and many people agree with me, it's not like I'm out there alone, you know, but it's a system which is actually impeding progress. Because they're looking for one magic bullet. And by the way, there is a book by a doctor called Ray Chang, who is part of a movie that we'll talk about, and it's called Beyond the Magic Bullet. Dr. Chang believes that you've got to, as we just said, attack the cancer from all different ways, all different routes, and that one magic bullet, you know, like a chemotherapy or even an immunotherapy, the cancer is going to get smart and come back and come through another avenue.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just the way it is.
Yeah,
but doctors are afraid to go outside of the standard of care, and that's so sad.
It is. It is sad. And it's like you said, cancer cells are smart, and we have to, that has to be attacked from every direction. And on a massive scale. I mean, you just need to take massive action. Of course, you don't want to take more action than the body can handle. But and that's why it's good to you need to be working, of course, with a good doctor that will look at all angles of it. And let's talk about that a minute. You know, what can, you know, there are a lot of things that we can do to help strengthen our body and to kind of keep ourselves or do our best to keep out of that cancer camp to begin with. What are some of the things you would recommend? I know that you mentioned about eating organic, and I don't think people really realize how important that is about eating organic foods.
Yeah, I think it's very, very important, but I have to tell you, I think one of the most important things is avoiding sugar and avoiding processed foods, because if you can't pronounce it, don't eat it.
Yeah.
Have you looked at the labels on some of these processed foods? When you get into something that, you know, I'm a former English professor, you know, I didn't tell you that, but if I can't pronounce it and if I don't know what the heck it means don't eat it, you know?
Right. Well,
so
if you just start reading labels, that is one thing that just like you just said, and I started doing that some years ago. My daughter had some allergies, started looking at the labels, and I'm like, oh my, what are they trying to do, kill us? You know? And it does make you wonder, but you know, when you can't, they've got all of these different, and I'm thinking, is this totally necessary to put all of this junk in there, that all of these chemicals? I mean, you know, at some point you get to wondering, now what's really going on here? And I don't mean to be a conspiracy theorist, but I mean, good night. I mean, it does not take all that. You can't tell me it takes all those different kind of chemicals to preserve that food.
No, it definitely doesn't. And you know what? I am not a vegetarian, but, you know, even looking at the meats, they put the antibiotics in it.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, they have put antibiotics in meats for years and years and years, because I remember my father actually getting people, it was a Thanksgiving dinner, and my father, as I said, was a doctor, and he started talking, this might have been, you know, years ago, talking about how they gave antibiotics, and people started leaving the table, you know.
Oh, wow.
Because they were doing it way back then.
Yeah.
And so you're getting an extra dose of antibiotics, you're getting chemicals in your meat. in your salad dressing. You're getting sugar and you're getting chemicals. So I think that would be the first thing. Now there's also the chemicals in your beauty products, you know, in the soaps you use and the shampoos. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for next time I can find the websites that will tell you, you know, how to avoid these things, mm-hmm. because they can poison you too. What you do about the air, I don't know, because mm-hmm. the air just has loads of chemicals and poisons in it, and yeah. we're being poisoned.
Yeah, we are. And I know you can get, and you know this, you get air filtration for your house, but it doesn't help when you go outside, you know.
No.
I guess live in the country if you can, you know, and still there's toxins there because you take all these farms and then they're spraying all these fertilizers and chemicals on the grounds, getting into the well water and all that. So, I mean, you're right. We're being, you know, so many chemicals. We've been hit with so many. And I believe, and this is my personal opinion, but I really believe that we are so full of toxins that in some people it is obstructing the detoxing pathways, like the MTHFR pathway and some other detoxing pathways that we have in our body. I believe the toxins are getting in there and preventing that. And again, this is not science now. I mean, this is my personal, you know, just from what I've read and everything, I believe that's probably what's happening. And if those detox pathways get blocked and get to where they're not working properly, then guess what? Then toxins are going to start backing up. Then you can't get yeah. rid of toxins like you're supposed to, and then you've got trouble. And that's what several cases that I know of at the Lyme clinic where I was at, a lot of those people, not all of them, and I don't know about all of them, but I know quite a few of them had had trouble with their detox pathways, you know. But they're so toxic, and they were some of the sickest patients, some of the sickest
yep.
people. Which totally makes sense. And so, I mean, to me, we've got to start somewhere. I mean, we need to filter our water, and we need to, you know, we need to get air filters, and we can do all we can do, but every little bit helps. And I think it all has a synergistic effect, just like the toxins can have a synergistic effect in a negative way. The more we do to get the toxins out of our life can also have a synergistic effect in a positive way. Well, we're getting to the end of the show, and I've really enjoyed this, and we're going to be talking more about this. We're going to be talking next week more about her book and what's in her book, about some of these treatments that she has found to help people in overcoming and getting better from cancer. What would you suggest for people those that are listening today that want to know more?
What I suggest, it's kind of not an appendix, but an afterword to my book. I suggest, this is kind of answering your question, but not, but to follow your gut, to listen to your gut. If what the doctor is doing, sakes, I'm not trying to get you to not listen to your doctor. Do you know what I mean? If you have a simple infection and a simple antibiotic cures it, great.
Judith, say that last sentence again about your doctor.
If you have... That you should trust your gut. If what the doctor is doing is working, great. Don't mess with perfection. If you have a simple infection and a cures it, don't refuse the antibiotic. You know. However, there are conditions that we'll talk about next time, like autoimmune diseases. You know, like things like epilepsy, like cancers, where there is no simple answer, and therefore. Trust your gut. If you know what the doctor has been recommending and doing is not working, look outside the box and start now to get research, to research for a ride by a lot of what is on the internet. And by the way, I'm writing another book on low-dose naltrexone now with a co-author named Don Schwartz, and we're finding that half the people who tell their stories, you know, about being helped by this one treatment that we'll talk about next week called low-dose naltrexone, they say, thank God for the Internet. There is so much that's good on the Internet, but there's so much that can really fool you.
Yeah,
so that's my parting shot.
Okay. Well, thank you, Julia. I really appreciate you and for all you're doing to educate the public. You know, because there's just so many different choices out there, and that's what people need to realize. Yes, you know, if what your doctor, we're not telling you not to listen to your doctor. You always listen to a doctor, but always go with your gut. And you can, you know, you may need to find another doctor that will be more in line with what your gut's telling you, because there are, nowadays, there are several doctors out there that do look out outside the box. And I think it's important to find those, because you do need, if you have cancer especially, you need to be under a doctor's care. But you also need to be doing things that actually work, because we want you healthy, we want you living, and we want you to beat it if you have cancer. But be sure and listen next week, because I'm going to have her back, and we're going to be talking about some of these low-cost, very effective treatments with very few, if any, side effects that work, that Julia has researched and she's written in her book. And we're going to be talking about that next week. So as always, the information in this show is for educational purposes only and is not meant to diagnose or treat any health condition. If you have a health concern, always consult a qualified healthcare practitioner. And this is Beverly Butler, and you've been listening to the Misdiagnosed Life podcast and talk radio on the America Out Loud Network.